God's called me here, and that was at Ballast Point, and I didn't have any inkling to leave, so I knew that's where I was supposed to be. The day we opened after merging and the building was complete and we had the one opening service, it just made me cry. It was just what I had envisioned.
Welcome to the Last Service Podcast. I'm your host, Matt. You may have heard that American churches are closing at a pace faster than new churches are opening. In fact, it is estimated that over 4,000 churches will close this year. The need for thoughtful conversations about the declining church in America is more crucial than ever, and I've got some questions. Are these dying churches a tragedy, or is it an inevitable part of a church's life cycle? What happens when a church closes? How do we pastor and lead a dying church? And how can a declining church end well? On this podcast, we explore the stories of American churches that have closed, consolidated, or merged. But this isn't a tale of despair. It's a celebration of good endings, enduring legacies, and the courage to embrace new beginnings. This is not the end. After the first few episodes of the Last Service Podcast were released, I had several friends and family reach out and share that they knew folks who had been through similar situations, church mergers, church closings. And I was talking with my friend Rick, who's, we go way back playing music together all the way back in high school in Tampa, Florida. And he's a great person to get creative feedback from. He asked me if I remember Tom Sander from Davis Islands Baptist. I briefly interned in the music department at Davis Islands for one summer. Rick was on staff there, and so was Tom. And I knew there was a merger with Ballast Point Baptist, but I didn't really know the full story. So Rick shared with me that when the merger happened, Tom wasn't sure he was even going to be invited to join the Davis Islands staff. But it turns out he was, and he ended up staying there for another 20 years. They refurbished the old Ballast Point Baptist campus where he started, and his grandson was baptized there right around the same time that Tom retired after 30 years of ministry in Tampa, Florida. It's a great story to tell, and I was very glad to get reconnected with Tom Sander. I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, hi there, Tom. It's good to see you again. It's been a minute. We kind of go way back, but I'm glad you're here and could join us.
We do. A mutual friend, and it's good to see you again too, Matt.
Yeah. Tom, tell us about yourself, your ministry, family life, all that good stuff.
All right. I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. At 15 years old, I was a music director at a church there, Northwest Baptist, and also the youth director at the church as well. Was involved with music since I was very young. At age 15, I was in the bel canto chorus that sang with the Milwaukee Symphony. Did that work at Northwest for a while until I felt the Lord calling me to go to school. So I ended up moving to St. Louis, Missouri, and went to Missouri Baptist College. There I met my wife, and her dad was a Bible professor there. Her mom worked in the bookstore. We ended up getting married, and we moved back to Milwaukee. There we were part of a television program on WVCY, which is Christian radio and television in Milwaukee. And we had a service, and I sang for that service on the air. And the executive director of WVCY was interested and asked if I'd come on and be his assistant and the voice or the soloist for WVCY radio and television. So I did that after moving back to Milwaukee. I was assistant executive director and a singing voice for WVCY for about 7 years, and came to about 1994, and I felt the Lord calling me on, and I had another friend in Florida, Tampa area, that was a pastor here, and he set me up with a church down here in Tampa, and that was Ballast Point Baptist Church. And in 1994, at that time we had two children. And my wife started working at a Christian school, and I was the full-time music director at Ballast Point Baptist Church. Actually, over the next 3, 4, 5 years, we had a lot of change in the church. One of the pastors got in legal trouble. Yeah, it was a mess. Another pastor left for a bigger church. Another pastor had a calling somewhere else. So within 4 or 5 years, there was 3 different pastors there. We were solvent. We didn't owe any money. We had a great piece of property down in South Tampa that was valued very highly. And a lot of people wanted it for different things, strip malls and whatever. And we just hung on. And eventually, another church that was up the road. It was an offshoot of Idlewild Baptist Church, and Idlewild took over Davis Islands Community Church, and they had 1,200-1,500 people in a small sanctuary every Sunday. 5 different services, 2 at 1 hour, 2 at another hour, in both sides of the church. So it was just bursting at the seams. And we were down just a couple miles from them in South Tampa. And I made a call to the missions director for the area. And I said, do you think there's any possibility that they'd be interested in a merge? And so I met with the pastor at that time, and we both decided to pray about it and see what God wanted us to do. It's easy for the larger church to pick up a smaller church, especially if there's no bills. There really wasn't any problems. We had, you know, a couple hundred people there. But when I moved down to Tampa, I envisioned this area that I was in the South Tampa, Ballast Point area, as having an incredible ministry down there. And I knew the pastor that was at the church was a fantastic one. I knew they needed...
This is at Ballast Point?
There was no pastor at the time. I just had people coming to fill in.
Oh, okay.
But the pastor at Davis Island was an incredible pastor. Yeah.
That's what you're talking about. Okay.
So we had a couple meetings, and I guess it's important to go through the time frame there.
Yeah, let's back up just a little bit and get some more details. So you moved down in 1994. Church was already, like, the next 3 to 4 years were rough. What was the church attendance like in 94 to 98?
We range anywhere from maybe 150 at the lowest to 300. Somewhere in that area.
And it kept dropping over the next period, or?
Well, it did a little bit. You know, every time a pastor leaves, you kind of lose some of your congregants. And especially when it's in such a short range, time range, it gets a little frustrating for some people because they want some consistency for themselves and their families. So, you know, it was maybe down to 150, 200 when we were talking merger.
Yeah. And you said, I don't want to get into the too far into the dirty details, but what you talked about a variety of reasons the pastor left. But I mean, if you were to kind of pick an overall reason the church was struggling to keep a pastor, I mean, what would you say was going on with the health of the church at that time?
I would put the health of the church a lot higher than the health of some of the pastors that were there.
Okay.
There was some legal dishonesty. Actually did like years in prison.
Oh,
kind of things.
Okay.
So
that is the dirty detail. Okay. So in a sense, this is a healthy congregation. They're not, you know, to put it in comparison, they're not a church that's eating pastors up and no. You got a deacon board that just can't get along with anybody or anything like that. It's a healthy congregation, just having trouble finding a right fit. Is that a good way of putting it?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We, we struggled in between pastors. And I had a friend of mine who was a pastor come and fill the pulpit every time in between these pastors. So there was some consistency there with at least someone they knew that that would come and fill in while these other pastors left.
Yeah. And your role is still music at this time.
Correct. Well, I came there in 94 doing music and youth, but got away from the kids and more did administration and music. That's where I ended up.
Gotcha. And you were kind of the last man standing at that point.
I was the last staff standing.
The
correct.
Last staff standing. Yeah, it's a better way to put it.
I guess it's important to say, like I said, it's easy for the larger church to pick up something where there's no money involved. A lot of people have come to us, a lot of churches since then, wanting us to kind of pay off their bills, and that's not what we were about. So it's kind of a delicate thing, especially if you're the smaller church going into a bigger church. You don't give up your principles, but I think you have to somewhat give up your personality and who you are merging into another church. You kind of have to give up your identity and become the bigger church's identity, and which we were fine with because it was a very strong church.
Sure. And you've got the Baptist connection. That makes things a lot easier. Governance-wise and doctrine-wise, you're going to be pretty much on the same page. So, Tom, your Ballast Point Baptist is still over 100 at this point.
Yes.
When you reached out to Davis Islands Community, you've got no debt. What was it that was prompting you to think about merger? Because I think a lot of folks would say, hey, we're going to go and turn around. We're going to grow from here. We're going to come up with a plan. What made you start to think about, hey, we need to join with another congregation?
It was kind of a calling I had since I got there. And I saw the difficulties that this larger church in a much smaller building were having. And I don't want to sound flippant, you know, divide and conquer. I talked to a lot of people before it was public. You talk to the people in your congregation one-on-one and let them know your heart and your desires. And so it's not a surprise. You come up one Sunday and say, hey, we're thinking of merging with another church. By the time I did that, half the congregation at least knew about it and were supportive of it. And then it was just a matter of bringing in that pastor and having him share on a Sunday night his vision that actually matched our vision. So we ended up putting like $8.5 million into the building where I was.
At Ballast Point.
Correct. We moved everyone from Ballast Point up to Davis Island for a year and a half, 2 years, while the church was being refurbished, renovated. And then we all moved back to Ballast Point once it was finished. And that was incredible.
So you were hoping to, you saw another church that was a larger church in a space that was way too small. Correct.
They had actually 14 parking spots in that church that were theirs.
Yeah.
For about 1,500 people on a Sunday, which the neighbors hated us because we had cones out all over the streets, and neighbors were complaining and calling the police on us. And yeah, it was a rough couple of years with all of us on Davis Island, but it was a great time once we got to the new building.
What's our time frame right now? Because we're at 2004. Is that about right?
Yep, the merger took place in 2003.
2003. That's right.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I remember because I was around that time, and there was a summer in there. I think it was 04. I was interning or something. Anyway, I was around there. I remember walking through it when the renovation was starting. But yeah, when we say a crowded church at Davis Islands, yeah, the area, for those who don't know, this area is very urban. It's all fully developed city blocks. So, I mean, people were parking along streets, people were parking, blocking driveways, I'm sure, like all of that stuff. And you hinted at it earlier, it was two services simultaneously. So one end of the building was doing a service at the same time the other end of the building was correct. Doing a service, and the musicians switched halfway through.
Right. We had the music up front on this side, and then they switched, and that included a choir too,
back
and forth.
Yeah.
And then it was a 9 o'clock, and then I think we had an 11 o'clock as well, again with both services. And then we think we had one in the shortly before noon or something too. But I know there was five services going on in that building at pretty much one morning.
If you've been a part of a church closing or merger, I want to hear your story. Reach out to me at lastservicepodcast@gmail.com. We'll schedule a time to talk and see if your testimony could be a source of inspiration for other churches and other church leaders.
The Davis Islands was packed out, needed a larger building, and you, a few miles down the road, had a large building with a lot of space that could be used in a smaller congregation. And so that was the motivation between the merger?
Yeah, but besides me and envisioning what could possibly be down there one day. And I remember the day we opened after merging and the building was complete and we had the one opening service. It just made me cry. It was just what I had envisioned.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a testament, Tom, to you being able to see a bigger picture. Cause I think I've talked to several other churches that just got so much smaller before they ever even considered merger. It's pretty amazing that you thought of it that soon, and your congregation was cool with that too. Cause like you said, they did have to give up some of their identity, some of their, what they're used to. They had to go park on people's driveways and stuff or wherever for a little bit. Did you end up losing anybody during that time, or did most everybody stick with it?
Yeah, it was a complete success. There were a few families that thought I gave away their church, which is a, response that I expected with some. But the vast majority, except like I say, for a few families, were well in favor of what we did. And I don't regret it for a second.
So, yes, you've merged. Big renovation happens in Ballast Point Baptist, and then everybody moves back to Ballast Point Baptist. What was your role during the transition, and what was it after?
I've held so many roles. I've been in ministry. Obviously, I'm not a young guy. I've been in ministry over 50 years now. But at Davis Island or South Tampa Fellowship, I've worked in operations, always in music. I've done benevolence, give out money for the church for those in need, some administration, a lot of different things. I'm not a great preacher, and I believe in giving strength where your strength is. That's where you need to stay. I've done some services and obviously married and buried some people, but the music and the singing is my calling. I still, I retired about 6 months ago, and I am still doing the music there on Sunday mornings for the senior room. We call it the Wild West. And I go out
The Wild West. Why is it called the Wild West?
It's kind of a funny term for us old people in there. They like to call themselves the Wild West in there. So we go with it. And I also go out like once a month on a Tuesday. They have a chapel for some of the older saints, and I go and do music for them as well. So I still have my foot in the door. I'm still doing music every Sunday, and I just don't have an office there anymore.
So when the merge happened with David's Islands Community, did you anticipate that you were going to stay on staff, or how did that part of the negotiation all work out?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't expect anything. I didn't know if that was going to be a possibility or not. And it just worked out that, you know, my skill set, music and everything, was an asset to the church. And it turned out we had a long relationship. I was with them for 30 years before I retired, that group of people.
So you didn't know what was going to happen. What would have happened had you not gone on staff there? Like, would you, you would have been out of a job, Tom.
Yeah. I'm sure I could have found something else, but I just trusted the Lord had me, because I knew I was following what I needed to do at that point. So I really wasn't worried about myself at the time. I can always find a job doing something in music or whatever. But I gave it all up and said, you know, Lord, whatever you want, I'm okay with that. If I need to move on, I'll do that. You know, there were some times before the merger where, you know, things got so rough. I said, you know, I just can't do this anymore. And then something miraculous would happen, and God would bring me back there. But there was a couple times. If you're in church ministry long enough, you'll be tested somewhere along the line where you say, I just need to get out of this and do something else. But fortunately, I was able to stay on for, like I say, the 30 years with Davis Island and South Tampa Fellowship. It's a great run. We've had difficulties along the way, like I said, but the church is thriving today, better off now than when I got there. So I'm excited still about what we did.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Last Service podcast. Hey, if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe so you can stay updated for upcoming episode. Okay, that's all. Back to the story.
So let's map out kind of the organizational chart here a little bit. So you had Ballast Point Baptist, which is where you came from when you came down from Milwaukee. Down the road is Davis Islands Community Church, which had been, was still under Idyllwild Baptist at that time, or no?
Davis Island Community Church merged with Idyllwild and then became Davis Island Baptist Church Idyllwild Extension.
I remember that. Yes. Okay. And at that point, that's when the talk with merging with Ballast Point happened, when they were
correct
still connected.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was an Idyllwild church at that
right.
point.
It was an extension campus, effectively.
Right. So, and the youth pastor at Idyllwild is the one that became the pastor at Davis Island Baptist Church when they moved out of into Davis Island Community Church. The youth pastor from Idyllwild came and became the senior pastor at Davis Island.
Okay. And then Davis Island's Baptist, which was an extension of Idyllwild, became its own church. Is that correct?
Yes. They separated from Idyllwild, which was a good thing. They needed to be autonomous and independent. And definitely they were large enough where they could go on and not need support from a larger church.
Yeah. And that became South Tampa Fellowship?
Yeah. Well, STF, yes. South Tampa Fellowship. And we decided once we had the building down in South Tampa on Ballast Point and the one on Davis Island that we'd kind of make one name rather than Davis Island Baptist Church and Ballast Point Baptist Church. We made it STF Ballast Point Campus, STF Davis Island Campus.
Great. And that's the way it is today, right?
It is.
Very good. Very good. And what's the total attendance ballpark now at both of those?
We have got, let me see, we've actually got three congregations now. We've got maybe anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 at Ballast Point. We have probably 200 to 300 at Davis Island. And then we rent StageWorks, which is in Channel District, downtown Tampa area.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They have StageWorks. It's a black box performance theater. So we rent that and have a service there every Sunday morning with about 50 people there.
Oh, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So three different campuses.
That's good. Yeah. I would normally not say this, but in this instance, it's actually really good that the Davis Islands campus is smaller now because that place was jam- I remember one time the choir risers fell with the choir on them.
Because yes. I remember it well.
The rush back.
Yeah. The risers fell down in the South Auditorium. Yeah. And it was a big fright because the choir director at that time, his daughter was pregnant and she was on the risers that fell. So everyone was scared for a little while, but everything turned out well.
Yeah, I don't remember anyone being hurt, but testament to how hard they worked to get all of those people in at the time.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Rick told me your grandson was recently baptized, like right near your retirement.
Yeah. My son is also Tom Sander. They named the young one. He's got my full name, Thomas Joseph Sander, as well. So he called me up one night, and it was FaceTime call, and he said, "Pappy, I got to tell you something important." I said, "What's that?" So he said, "I ask God to be with me always," and he said, "I want you to baptize me." There's not much greater thrill in the world than that.
And that was at the Ballast Point building. Of
correct
Tampa Fellowship. So you came down, 1994 from Milwaukee with a young family. Pretty quickly, things were not going great at the church, if we may say.
In fact, when I was 2 weeks away from moving to Florida, the pastor that was at the church at Ballast Point that I was coming to said, he called me 2 weeks before I went down there. He said, "We're really looking forward to you being here, but I think I'm going to be moving on. I might be going to another church." By the time I got there, he was still there, but there was about 8 different churches that he was going to once I got there, which was a little unsettling, and he finally took one.
Wow.
But it was always, you know, "I'm going here. Do you want to go with me? I'm going here. Do you want to go with me?" I said, "God's called me here. You go where God's calling you to go, and I'm going to go where God lead me." And that was at Ballast Point, and I didn't have any inkling to leave. So I stayed on through it. I knew that's where I was supposed to be.
However many 30 years later. Yeah. 30 years later,
30,
your grandson is baptized at the same place, and you've had a legacy of ministry over that time at that campus. So Tom, like I said earlier, a lot of the churches that I've talked to, you know, they started thinking about merger when they were below 50, sometimes below 30. Yours is a great example of approaching
non-desperation.
Okay. So speak to a second for folks, pastors or church leaders who, you know, have been through a phase of church life that wasn't so great, but you're just not sure where you're at. I mean, what advice would you have for them based on your experience?
Well, if you're in a position like I was, it's more of a calling that you feel on your life and the life of the congregation that you're leading. I felt there was so much more to do there. I knew it wasn't the end of the church. I knew it was just time for revitalization and a new start. Some of the smaller churches that I know that have done this as well go kicking and screaming the whole way, which is a tough way to start a merger. And if they do merge and you have a small congregation and people feel like it's their church or they own it or they're the ones that make the decisions, that's a tough way to merge. You have to have a unity and, like I said, give up your identity for the larger and just make sure that the church you're merging into has your belief system and your values. And it makes it so much easier if you just let go and let God do it.
Yeah, let go is a recurring theme. So, from a legal perspective, the merger between Ballast Point and Davis Islands Baptist Church, an extension of Idlewild, did Ballast Point Baptist legally cease to exist as an entity, or were new laws crafted to merge the two together?
It was new merger. We merged Ballast Point into Davis Island, and then once the name shifted all to STF. Legally, that was all done then.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So that says something too, because a lot of times there are people that don't like the word merger because it has more of a business connotation. And I I agree with that. I think it's also just the most practical word. There are other times where merger is almost a kind way of saying a dissolution and donating of assets.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's what it is.
And merger is just the nice way to do it. And of course, then we can also separate the business side from the church body aspect or the spiritual side. And that, sure, you might have a dissolution of the organization and a transfer of assets, but hey, those 20 families are welcome and encouraged to join this next church. And so spiritually it is a merger. This sounds like it was an actual true, like, merger. Like everybody brought something to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. We had, you know, people in our congregation at Ballast Point that were assets and really got involved with the Davis Island, the STF thing, and still to this day, there's some people that were part of that are, you know, active at the church. So it's been a great ride.
That's great. What do you think helped them be able to let go of their preferences, their, how did you put it earlier? Well, the sense of autonomy, the sense of culture at Ballast Point. How did you help them let go of that?
Well, you know, I think the best motivation for them was the success, seeing the people come in and the new families and the kids and people they had never seen before that were all in our community, that they just needed to see that something was going on there. The revitalization and the renewal of the church. It's just exciting to get on the bandwagon and, you know, go where God's going and what he's doing to the church. You know, like I say, there was a few families that like small churches. They like control. And those people, you know, sometimes you have to plow around stumps if you're in the field rather than try and plow through them. So, you know, God worked it out. Some left, but the right ones remained. And it turned out very strong.
Your feedback means the world to me. Would you please take a moment and leave a review on your preferred podcast platform? It's going to help us grow and we'll reach more listeners who might benefit from these conversations. Thanks so much.
Yeah, this is an interesting story of the number of churches that helped each other out. There was always another church uplifting another church in this scenario, whether it was Idlewild helping Davis Islands, which then collaborated with Ballast Point, which then becomes this new thing. And now it's, you know, spreading even further. So what would you say the legacy of Ballast Point Baptist Church is?
I think probably it's a church that was willing to give up its identity in itself to reach people for Christ in our community. And I'm really excited and proud that we were able to do that with the people that were there. There's other churches in our area that really need help. And we've even offered to help send preachers over there and singers and whatever, musicians on Sunday morning. And some churches just are too possessive of their building that they don't want that. And that's okay. I mean, sometimes it takes time for people to realize what they need to do. And sometimes they never do. And the church turns into a mini mart or something, which is sad.
I like how you put it before. You're able to make decisions without desperation. Last bit of advice I'll ask you for, and then I'll ask you for just final thoughts. Because this is difficult and it's different for every congregation, but every congregation also has similar life cycles, right? So where would you say a church should start thinking about existential decisions? not necessarily the end, but what can we do? What are the trigger points for a church to start thinking about that from your perspective?
Number one, if families start to leave, especially families with young people and kids there, you need to do a lot of soul searching and ask why they're doing that. We did a lot of prayer during the time when we didn't have a pastor. And, you know, it's tough sometimes. It really is. You see your congregation start to go down, and you know there's a vision for something great in that area. And I think you have to be sensitive to what God is doing. And then, like I say, talk to people around, talk to the leaders in the church, and see if they have the same vision you do. Don't wait till you're, you know, scrapped. You can't pay the bills. You can't pay your staff, which was never our case. It's much better to do it with God's calling than out of a desperation. You know, what do we do now?
All right, Tom, any final words to wrap up our story here?
Well, just happy to be with y'all. I'm good to see you again. Our mutual friend is just still a strong friend, and we get together whenever he's in the area. And I'm just grateful for his friendship. He's a great friend and musician, and just happy to have had that have him in my life as well.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for your time.
Sure, Matt. Have a blessed day.
Thank you for listening to the Last Service podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Before we go, I want to share with you three key takeaways. The first is to let go. Tom led Ballast Point through a merger even when it meant losing control and autonomy, and he cast a vision that helped others see how what could happen at Ballast Point through the merger was more important than their own preferences. My second takeaway is that steady, committed leadership may be better than having a pastor who is a dynamic speaker. Tom said of himself he's not a great speaker and that his strengths lied in other areas. But during all of the turnover at Ballast Point, Tom provided that steady, committed leadership rooted in the fact that he felt called to that church and he was inspired by a vision for greater ministry in that area. Lastly, don't wait until your church is desperate for help. Make the best decisions possible for the future of your church while you still have resources to offer. Those are my three takeaways for this episode. I hope this episode brought you wisdom, inspiration, and peace. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and stay updated on upcoming episodes. Please take a moment to leave a review. It helps us grow and reach more listeners who might benefit from these conversations. If you have been a part of a church closing or consolidation, I want to hear your story. Reach out to me at lastservicepodcast@gmail.com. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. This is not the end.